You're listening to the Fantasy Football Astronauts.
Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Football Astronauts. I am your host today, Rish. You can catch me on Twitter at @FF_Rish. We got a good one today. Jetpack, how are you doing, my man?
I'm good. We get to talk about the best position, wideouts.
Yes, this is going to be a lot of fun. And to join us, we brought on one of the hosts of the British Ballers podcast. If you have not checked that out, go listen to it. Their first episode dropped last Thursday. And we're excited to have Rich on. You can catch him on Twitter at FFMiz1. Rich, how's it going? How's the life of a podcaster?
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you. I feel like I'm touring around the podcast world now. It's my third podcast in a week. So,
there we go.
I'll be signing autographs after the show.
I love that. Rich and Kev are doing the British Ballers podcast. It's awesome. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and they really play off each other well. So, you guys were a ton of fun on that first episode.
Yeah, the only part I didn't enjoy, to be fair, was the quiz. So for anyone that's not listened yet, I'd ask you to turn off before you get to the quiz.
Kev's quizzes are hard. Those are fun ones, though.
Well, when I listened to when Kev hosted with you guys, I was in the car listening to that, and I was thinking, how are they not getting these right? But then when you're under pressure, you're actually on the mic.
Oh, it's totally different.
It's totally different. My mind went blank.
Way different.
For the Minshew question, he could have said it rhymes with Bard and a Gin Shoe, and I still wouldn't have got it. I was like, hey, I don't know.
Oh, I love that. Awesome. So we're talking about... Oh, we do not have a game today, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
I'll write one up while we're going.
Right. So this will be an impromptu game.
Yeah, Rish versus Rich.
Oh, no.
Rich versus Rich.
Yeah, who's the real guy?
This should be fun. So today we're talking rookie wide receivers. I just finished up most of my wide receiver film watching, or at least the initial one. I'm going to go back in and definitely get some more film watching in. Can never watch too much film. Has there been anything in general, Rich, that stuck out to you about this class?
I think for me that the main thing about the wide receiver class is how deep it is, to be honest. I mean, if you're looking at it from perspective of a rookie draft, I think you could still get value at wide receiver late into round two, potentially even going into round three. Obviously, I know we talked about it a little bit before the show. It obviously depends on draft capital and things like that, but there's wide receivers that I'd be very excited about getting way into round three, potentially.
I agree. It is a really deep class, and there's a lot of guys that with their skill sets could step into the right position and start day one, you know, and be fantasy relevant day one. It's going to immediate fantasy production is definitely going to depend on their landing spot. But I think long term, you have a lot of potential in this class to develop in the next couple of years as guys retire, as you see quarterbacks change, as you see offenses change. So day one starters, there are plenty. And a couple years down the road, you're going to have some guys that develop really well, I think. Jetpack, how about you? Anything that stands out about this class?
No, I think you guys are hitting it kind of where everybody is as far as it being super deep and there being a lot of great value. Like looking back in 2019, it was such a surprisingly deep class where you're like, oh, here's some talent. But then it ended up being like so thick. This one, you know, that I mean, we got a bunch of Terry McLaurin's in this class. And so that's what's so exciting about it is your third and fourth rounders, those guys you're going to hit. You'll probably have a little bit more of those in 2020 than you would in any other class that we've seen since probably 2014. So definitely excited about this crap.
It's going to be a lot of fun getting into rookie drafts and seeing how the NFL draft shakes out. Before we really get into what our film says, Jetpack, why don't you take us through your college profile pre-draft model? It's got a really great correlation with fantasy production. And I want you to talk a little bit more, because I feel like people will have seen the tweets and the tweet threads and maybe read your articles, but to fully understand, it's much easier to have someone explain that. So can you explain that model for us and how that works out and what guys it likes?
Yeah, of course. So what we're trying to do with any sort of model is put a different framework for somebody who's trying to evaluate players and try to put them all kind of on the same level and then give them context. And so it's not necessarily, for me, it's not a ranking per se. It just helps me see things through a different lens. And that's the value of going into the analytical models and things like that. And what we've talked about in the way that we see a lot of things go down with the way people are looking at stats is that they'll run into like not knowing what the correlation of something is and just citing stats and saying, oh, this guy's good because he has this dominator, or this guy's good because he has this many yards in college or whatever, and so that's why he's valuable. And so my goal has been, okay, let's take that, let's put some context to it, right? Let's say instead of, oh, he's Tyler Johnson has really good dominator, he's going to be the best player in the class, which is what he was for a lot of people until, you know, he was in the top tier until like things started to pick up in like him failing to produce at the combine and all that kind of stuff. But like people will look at a stat and say, okay, his dominator's high, so you know, he's going to be a really good guy, he's a blue chipper. And I think we miss some of the value of kind of taking the most you can out of stats by just cherry picking things or having a set of stats that you like without running any numbers on it. And so for me, it was really important to make sure that when I'm building my model, I know that it's correlating to fantasy points and not just like some sort of made up idea of, okay, well, here's some things that I know somebody else has said to be successful. I've now gone through and managed, okay, this over the last 20 years, this is what's most highly correlated with fantasy success. So what we're trying to do there is the two components that I'm doing pre-draft, where we're just running stats, is going to be a player's college production, the things that he does on the field statistically, and then his combine or athletic performance measurables. It's good to have those numbers there. And we're using things that people are going to be comfortable with hearing or have heard before. But the value there is not just cherry picking things, but again, like putting it together in a model. So for college production, the things that stand out for me that were the most valuable were breakout age, dominator rating, and then adjusting those things for like based on what team he was with or what conference he was in. And so if you've heard of dominator rating before, that's the amount of like total yardage, total touchdowns, and total receptions that a player has owned in terms of percentage. So he owns X amount of market share or X amount of ownership of the team's total passing yards. And so then he'll score more if he's like the wide receiver one on his team, or if he's the most prominent or the most dominant wide receiver on his team. And so that for people has been a really useful metric. And the number that a lot of people are running that on or against for being a breakout or for being good is 20%. So if you own 20% of your team's market share, then you are one of the better receivers on the team. And that's their like frame of reference. And so breakout age takes that dominator, that usefulness of, okay, we know the market share. And then we're saying, okay, once you've crossed that 20% threshold, that's when you've broken out. And so if you break out earlier, like when you're a freshman, then you're probably a better football player. And that's pretty much the case when you're running and looking back at like all these studs who are doing well, a high percentage of them are, or of the people that break out at age 18 or break out at age 19, a good amount of them end up doing well in the NFL. So like Larry Fitzgerald is a really good example, or Julio Jones is a 19-year-old guy that when he broke out. And so there's different things like that where when you look at, okay, if he's able to produce well and produce early in his career, then he's going to be a better player. So we're working through there. We're trying to get into comparing guys and giving context in terms of, okay, is he good with his team or anything like that? Is he the best player on his team is basically what you're doing with Dominator. Then my big thing, and this is my breakthrough and kind of why I'm so excited about my model in particular is that I'm adjusting it for team. And so a big part of the challenge with people is, okay, we'll say, okay, this guy's dominator, he never broke out, right? Henry Ruggs is like a hot topic that we'll talk about. Or Terry McLaurin was another guy who didn't break out. And he didn't break out because he was on a good team. And there's so many other receivers on Alabama, Jerry Jeudy, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, right? And so Ruggs doesn't have as much of an opportunity to own a huge amount of the market share like Jalen Reagor did, where Jalen Reagor, he's playing and he's got nobody else on the team. You can't name any of the other receivers, can you? And so with that in mind, you have to take into context that Henry Ruggs' dominator rating might need an extra boost because of the guys that he's playing with. And so what I'm doing with my model is I'm dominator based on how good the team was, and that gave me like a much higher correlation than if I just used dominator alone. So I was pretty proud of that. And then what we did is, or what
real
I ended
quick,
up
real
doing,
quick on that,
yeah.
How did you come up with that? Like, what when you were actually doing the creation of it, how did you decide what components to add in and how to weight them?
Yeah. So with team, like, for example, we're ranking teams based on their final rank in college football. And so like LSU scored number one, right? And so like all the top 10 teams, those guys scored higher. And so their dominators were worth more. And so like T. Higgins or Jerry Jeudy, their dominator ratings when their teams were national championships, when they won national championships, those guys were ranked higher. And basically I'm running through every stat that I can pull up. Whether that be breakout or dominator or yards or receptions or yards at this age, anything like that, I'll run a correlation to fantasy points that they'll score in the NFL. And then those ones that have the highest correlation, those are the ones that make it in my model. So does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. I just want everyone to kind of have a clear picture of what the not just what each of the components are, but why they are the ones that are put in and how they're weighted.
Yes. The comparison is to how well a player does in fantasy points per game.
Perfect.
So, yeah. And then we'll run ran the same thing with combine score. And so we're taking components. The most valuable components for the combine score were a player's arm length, his hand size, BMI, 40 time, launch score, which you and I had made together, and then three cone. And so, like, there's other things that I don't necessarily care about that people will get excited for, like, oh, what's his short shuttle or things like that. But to us, what we did is we said, okay, here's the most important things. Now let's break them into tiers. And so it doesn't necessarily matter that Jarvis Landry runs a 4.6 and Cooper Kupp runs a 4.65. Those guys are in the same tier for me in terms of how they're going to score in the combine. Or it doesn't necessarily matter that Denzel Mims runs 4.38 and Jerry Jeudy runs 4.45. Those guys are in the same tier for me. And those tiers are broken up based on how players score fantasy points. So like a big tier is the sub 4.36 tier. So like that tier has like Calvin Johnson, DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill, a bunch of studs. And then if you're not in that tier and you're in like the 4.37, 4.38, 4.4, 4.45, all of those guys, they're all in the same group because they'll all score about the same amount of fantasy points. And so that's how I'm dividing up tiers. And I did the same thing with the college stats as well. So there we'll get a little bit of a breakdown so that it's not a true like, oh, John Ross is going to be better than Darius Hayward Bay, and Darius Hayward Bay is going to be better than Devontae Adams because he runs faster. You're breaking it up into tiers so that it's not like so strict. And so that way you can get a better, closer correlation.
Nice. So who scored the, who are the top players in the model from this year and how do they compare to players from previous years?
Yeah. So, it'd be good just to mention the top players of the model. In general, so since 2000, top five players right now in the model: Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, Dez Bryant, Larry Fitzgerald, Hakeem Nicks, and I got Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, DK Metcalf, and so that rounds out your like a pretty solid group. Every single one of those guys is a hit. And that's all like knowing anything, like no draft capital or anything like that, not knowing team, anything like that. And so the model definitely hits. I'm not missing on like a Corey Davis who went to a smaller school. He kind of gets ruled out because of this. There's different things like that where I'm a little bit more excited about the model because I know those top guys, those are all hits. And so I only mentioned the first nine, top nine guys in the model. The 10th guy is T. Higgins. And to me, that was like a big shock.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that puts him again in like, that's a rare group of guys to put him with. And so T. Higgins, though, is so high because he's a sophomore breakout, early breakout on a national championship team, Clemson. And statistically, he's done everything you want him to do. Just for a lot of people, they don't necessarily look at him that way because there's a Lamb and a Judy in this class. But statistically, from that standpoint, that's kind of where we want to maybe start to view him. So T. Higgins is in at 10, and then I got Kenny Britt, Odell Beckham, and then Denzel Mims and Jalen Reagor pop right up after there. And so we've got some elite guys in this class where they're maybe not in the like upper tier where we're seeing Calvin and Julio and Dez, but they're in that next crop where there's some plenty good receivers there. Those are big names, right, to have Odell and Kenny Britt, DK Metcalf. Those are all kind of the same group of guys. So definitely excited about those three players in particular. Even though I think that might be a little bit higher compared to where I would have them in my rankings, it's nice to see, to be able to look out and say, okay, here's the players with long arms that are really fast and then produce for the good college teams.
So when you are, and I guess we'll talk about this now as we move into our grading the players and discussing the players, how do you weight this when you are evaluating the players now? Like how you watch your film and you look at this and you look at all the different things, how what percent would you say you weigh this in?
So this is still like a developing, growing process for me. I think it'll settle around like 10%. And so the model itself, when you're running a correlation on it, the like final percent value it will have will be about 30%-ish, 30 to 40% in terms of, that's running an RSQ. So R squared is the association or the correlation, but it's like you own a percentage of like how much it's related to something else. And so the number on this model is, it says 40% of a player's NFL success is related to the number in this model. Does that make sense? So it's higher than the 10% that I'm going to be using it with in terms of value. But that's because I prefer to rely on my understanding of what's going on in the film, what's going on the tape. And this is just more of like my way of like adding a little bit of filter to that. So it's a good tiebreaker for me where I look at Ruggs, who's an 85, in my receiver model of film. And I look at Reagor, who's an 84. But now I can say, okay, Reagor is valued more highly, even though I like Ruggs's film a little bit better. Reagor's I'm more confident in because I know of his like college profile, his background as a producer and a receiver at TCU.
No, that's good. That's good. All right. Awesome background. I'm excited to weigh that in with my evaluations a little bit more. Right now, most of what I've been doing is based off of film. I know, Rich, you're about the same. You're a little bit more on the measurables probably than me. When you're evaluating these guys, what percent would you say is film based in your evaluation? What percent would you say is more analytics based? And then how about draft capital? If you have those three things in there, what would you weight each one?
I would say, first of all, is the measurables, the analytics. Then I look at draft capital, and probably to a fault for myself is probably film last of all. That's why I was really interested to come on today, because I know Jetpack and both of you guys are really big film guys. So I'm really interested to see what you see differently, possibly compared to me, because film grinding is something I sort of want to start to get into. But at the minute, I'm very much analytic based, which probably comes across in a lot of my articles and tweets as well. Possibly a little bit of a criticism myself. I probably don't do enough film grinding, and a lot of my analysis is metric based.
No, it's good. I mean, you can do really well just doing number scouting. And I think that's part of the fun of it is like, oh, if I put together something that's decent, I can do just as well as somebody who knows to watch football or what they're looking at when they're watching film. And when you're able to combine both those things, I think that's when you take the next step.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think you look at, we'll probably get onto this when we go through the wide receivers in this class. If you look at someone like Jerry Jeudy, for example, where people are obsessed with the dominator rating and things like that, and that clearly doesn't tell you the full story of what an elite prospect he is. So if you're just looking at the raw numbers, you don't do any other research, people get obsessed with a college dominator rating and straight away they're going to knock Jerry Jeudy down for that. I've seen Jerry Jeudy ranked ridiculously low in some places. I've seen him as the wide receiver 5 or 6, which just seems absolutely
far too low.
I don't know what you guys think, but that's just crazy to me. I hope these guys are in my league.
Yeah, no, I've seen some really stupid stuff if you're just using numbers. that's part of why the tiers in my system matter, because the difference between somebody's dominator rating of 35% and Jerry Jeudy's dominator rating of like 24% isn't worth that many points, right? It's just like, okay, did you cross the threshold, right? And then, you know, was the team that you were on, were they relevant so that your dominator rating actually does matter? That to me matters more than like that 10% market share difference.
Yeah.
But some people, if they're just going to run through, they'll see, Tyler Johnson, 41% dominator rating. Like, he's more valuable in my model now. And so it's just a huge problem that I think people run into. And if you're not doing tier based or you're not team adjusting, you're going to get stuck.
Absolutely. So getting kind of into the team based stuff, when I'm watching film, I like to see how each guy did against the highest level of competition, right? So you want to see the skills that they have, but you also want to see, okay, how did they perform against the best competition? So I'm watching for when they're playing against LSU or Clemson or Ohio State. Like, I want to see them in the biggest games. Now, if they don't have the big games, it's not a death sentence or anything, but you have to weight it properly. Based on their competition. Like, if you have Antonio Gandy-Golden and he's not doing well against some lower level corners, that's harder to write off than it is a Henry Ruggs struggling against like the top corners. You know, that's part of the weighting as you're just watching the film. For me, at least, is what is the level of competition that they are playing in the game that you're watching? And then how did they perform against the higher levels of competition versus the lower levels of competition? But let's get into it. Let's get into our guys a little bit. For tier one, Jetpack, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Yeah. Let's just get into CD Lamb. I think he's consensus 101 in terms of receivers right now. For me, he's the easiest eval. He's just really good at everything that he does.
So good.
And the thing that stands out about him most is his body control. He's kind of like DeAndre Hopkins as far as hands go. He's really impressive. And what I liked seeing on tape that you don't get when you just look at numbers is how physical he is after the catch. Because he will run over guys or run around 5 Texas defenders. And he's just did such a good job as far as, okay, once the ball is in my hands, I'm an aggressive player. And so despite running a 4.5 at the combine, I thought he was plenty fast. The 4.5 is not slow. But I thought he was explosive in terms of what he was doing with the ball in his hands. So really impressed with CeeDee Lamb for sure. Do you guys have him at one?
Absolutely. He's my number one. Yeah, absolutely number one. I think you're right. I was quite fast by how quick he ran at the combine. You talked about the way he uses his body and things like that. For me, that's a great thing to have at the next level because he's a player. You talk about someone like Larry Fitzgerald as well. He doesn't necessarily need that speed as he progresses through his career as well. I think is just a home run pick, to be honest. He's number one, and he's number one in my rankings by a long distance now.
Initially, I had him as the only wide receiver in my tier one. And then I saw some of the special things that Jerry Jeudy was able to do. And while I still have CeeDee Lamb definitely ahead of Jerry Jeudy, Jerry Jeudy's into my tier one of wide receivers now. I think when you watch CeeDee Lamb, he's really special with the ball in his hands. Like a lot of these guys, they're running him on routes to get him open, but CeeDee Lamb is so good that they are putting him as a punt returner. They are running him on end arounds. Like they are doing everything they can to get the ball in this guy's hands, because not only is he a great when he's running routes, he's excellent with the ball in his hands, and so he can make people miss. Just like you were saying, Jetpack, his body control is incredible, and so he's just a weapon whenever he's on the field, and you want the ball in his hands as much as possible. I think one of the things that stuck out to me the most that you can't really see and understand if you don't watch the film is his manipulation of his speed. And he catches people not ready for his speed changes. And so you Henry Ruggs has incredible elite speed. Jalen Reagor is really fast, and you see that all on film. What people I think missed on film, or when they were thinking he was going to run such a slow 40, is that he manipulates his speed really well. He lulls you in, and then he'll blow by you. I think it was against Baylor. He caught the ball, and it should have been an easy tackle. The safety was coming up, should have been an easy tackle. And then all of a sudden, he turns it on, and now the safety's angle is obsolete, and he can't make the play. So he's really great at doing that with the ball in his hands. Tricks people constantly, but he's great at doing that in his routes too. He's never running his routes always at full speed. He hits full speed when he needs to get to the open space and pick apart zones, but his intelligence is on display as he uses his athleticism. He's just really great at controlling not only what his body does, like when he's in the air or when he's making an athletic move, but he's incredibly aware of how fast he's moving and how to manipulate other players' perception of where they need to meet him on the field. So I'm wildly impressed with CeeDee Lamb. He's also a physical blocker. Like he's not just a guy that's out there to catch passes. He's a physical blocker. Do you see that as well, Jetpack?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, he will like run over dudes. yeah, he's awesome. Do you have concerns about him at all?
I can't say that I really do. He had one or two concentration drops, but part of it, yeah, everyone does. Part of what I like about him, and what, like anything that would concern you on film, and there's really not much, is his confidence, right? He's out there and he knows that he's better than people. And that's one of the things that I really like that you can see on film, is he knows he's better than people, so he's going to like whatever comes at him at the next level, he's going to be prepared for mentally, and so that quells any concerns that I might have. And really, I can't think of any off the top of my head. Do either of you have concerns about him?
I have no concerns with him at all. My only question is, where do you think he will land? In terms of landing spot and draft capital, with someone like CeeDee Lamb, again, this comes back to just looking at analytics. I really don't think it matters. I think he's going to smash wherever he lands. But in terms of coming out of the gate as a rookie, where do you think the best landing spot would be for him?
It's a good one. So this is obviously you'd want him to land in Houston, because you know what, right? It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen at all. They don't have a pick till the third round, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like that's just straight in. Straight, like that's ideal dream landing spot. Never going to happen.
Yeah.
Ever. That's unfortunate though, because I would love that.
I think we're looking at Jets, Niners, Raiders. Those are probably the most realistic spots for him to go. He'll be in that top 15 range. And so, like, Jets will be a good fit because they have Perriman to stretch the field now. They just picked him up. So I think they still need the alpha. And he'd be a great fit there. And I think that would really boost Darnold's value to have all three of those receivers there doing damage. Raiders, I wouldn't be too excited about just because you don't know what the situation is long-term at quarterback. But
no.
I think we're all comfortable at least liking Gruden on his you know, just the initial outset. So, and you know he'd be the guy there immediately. And then the Niners, it would be interesting too. Same kind of idea. He'd be the alpha there, and Debo would be the mix it up kind of guy. So,
which would be interesting. Yeah. I don't think it would hurt Debo's value at all.
No, I don't think it would either. But in all of those situations, I still think he'd be my top receiver.
I agree. Those are the three most likely landing spots. There's one writer that says that if he happens to slip to pick 15, which I don't think he will, the Broncos could go with him. But I don't think he'll make it past those spots. 11, 12, 13 is likely where he's going to go, unless you see someone trade up for him, right? Like the Eagles trade up for him or something like that. Because there are definitely some wide receiver needy teams. I think of those teams, I would be most excited with the Jets, just because you kind of have like the other offenses are run first offenses, and I think the Jets are the only ones where you have a guy that could be a potential gunslinger in Sam Darnold. I do like Sam Darnold's talent, and so I think giving him, just like you said, another weapon with Rashad Perriman and Jamison Crowder there would be an excellent fit for him. So fantasy wise, I think Jets would be my preference. But I mean, I'm good with any of those three spots, really. Rich, what do you think? Are one of those preferable for you?
I'd say the Jets as well. Talked about Sam Darnold on the Ballers podcast last week, and my only concern with Sam Darnold is the weapons. Obviously, lost Robbie Anderson to Carolina. After that podcast, they signed Rashad Perriman, who I think I'm a little bit higher on than consensus. And as you say, he allows the offense to, he will stretch the field basically, and I think that's a great landing spot for Lamb. I think he could really take advantage of that. I see it from both ways. I'd love Lamb to land there for his own prospects, and again, I think it really boosts Darnold's value, as you say. So I'm really hoping for a Sam Darnold breakout this year. I just can't believe how underrated he seems to be. I know we're talking about the wide receiver, so we won't get into it too much, but he was hammered last year. You know, I'm ranting again like I was last week. It sets me so much, but I really think he was really badly done to with the coverage last year after he was caught on the mic with a seeing ghost comment and things like that. I think that was just a guy saying what he saw, really. I love Darnold, and I would love Lamb to land there as well. I think that would be great for both of them.
How about
one last thing? We'll do. I think we'll probably do a model comparison every time. It's just interesting to me. So in the model, Lamb would be like the big names that he's close to: Chris Godwin, Santonio Holmes, Jordy Nelson, Juju Smith-Schuster. The name that stands out to me is Juju. If you're comparing CeeDee Lamb to Juju, who would you prefer to have? Knowing Juju's gonna get Ben Roethlisberger back, knowing who he is for the Steelers. We're going Lamb versus Juju. Who do you like?
I liked Lamb. I like Lamb better than I liked Juju as a prospect. We haven't really seen Juju do too much. Granted, he's been injured and didn't have a great quarterback this year, but we haven't seen him step up and be that alpha without Antonio Brown yet. There are a lot of extenuating circumstances there. I get that, but Juju has more question marks for me than CeeDee Lamb does. So I'll probably go CeeDee Lamb right now, and because I think that landing spot could be just as good for CeeDee as it is for Juju having Big Ben. You got to keep in mind Big Ben's he's got one or two years left on his contract, and then he's probably out. So there's uncertainty in the future for Juju, and especially if he lands on the Jets, I think there's a lot more certainty for CD there. So I'll take CD over Juju. which honestly surprises me that I think that. That was a great question.
Right on, man. Let's go to Jerry Jeudy. Rich, tell me what do you love about this guy?
I really don't think there's much that you can't love about him, to be honest. As I said, when we talked about CeeDee Lamb, it's a little bit the same with Jeudy, as he's struggling to find any faults with his game, especially from an analytic perspective. In terms of, again, when you're looking at landing spot, I think he takes advantage wherever he lands. There's not that much to love about him. I think he was fantastic at Combine as well. I would love the Jags to take Jerry Jeudy, actually, but I don't think we will. I'm not convinced with DJ Shark, to be totally honest. But that's for another podcast. But yeah, there's not that much I can. I think one thing we covered a little bit earlier with Jeudy is, and what we've talked about in this model, is that people seem to dismiss his lack of dominator rating and things like that. But you have to look at the offensive players they had around him as well. And that played a big part in that. And I think people are severely underrating him based on that. And I like that because I can see Jeudy dropping in fantasy drafts to at least the middle of the first round potentially. As I said, I just don't get that analysis of him. But, you know, I'll take that all day if people are going to continue to rate him. Great for us.
Yeah. So Jeudy for me is the only guy in this class that I gave a 5.0 score for his route technique. So in breaking down release and cuts and breaks and the way that he'll turn his head or drop his hips or, you know, all of that, he's just phenomenal. And I think he's the best manipulator of a defense that we have in this class. The reason why he's lower than Lamb for me, and I think there's legitimate reasons why you could have other guys ahead of him, is because contested catch ability is not something that like frequently shows up for him. As far as like attacking the ball while it's in the air or winning a contested catch, I didn't see a ton of that. And so for me, that's actually just a legitimate question mark. During his sophomore season when he was so productive, he did play outside enough for me to not be worried about that. I think he can play outside in the NFL. But the opportunities he has where he's coming across the middle and he's got a guy on top of him or he's got to run over the top and, you know, jump over somebody, you don't get that like you do with Lamb or really a lot of the other guys. Like Ruggs had more contested catch success than Jeudy did. So it's not something that he can't do. It's just something that I don't think we got to see enough to where I'm confident to give him like a really good grade there. And that's the big separator for me. That's a separator for me from him with the rest of the class, but also with a guy like Amari Cooper. He'll stay behind Amari Cooper in terms of the way that I'm evaluating him for that reason, the contested catch kind of work.
If he goes out and he proves that he can do it in the NFL, though, what's the limit for him? Like he's, right.
Yeah,
you know, like that's his upside. And the problem, and this isn't necessarily a problem, is he's such a good separator that he never puts Tua in those situations. So I love Jerry Jeudy. He's the best in this class at getting off of press man. And he never does it the same way. He's just like you can't get a hand on him in jam. And that's the one knock that I've had with a lot of these guys is they struggle to get off the line in press man. Jerry Judy's the one guy that I will never be afraid of him getting jammed at the line. He's just so good at manipulating people. And then when he's got the ball in his hands, it's unreal. Like he's electric with the ball in his hands. He makes people miss like crazy. And he's actually really good at breaking tackles. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but I don't have a number on this, but he has a lot of broken tackles where you think guys have them wrapped up. But because of his knee drive, he's able to get out of tackles. And because of the way he's able to angle his body and manipulate force, he's really good at doing that. He's able to break tackles pretty easily. So, I have no real concerns about Jerry Jeudy. The one that's been kind of raised is, does that crazy force that he puts on his knees, does that make him more likely to be injured? And that like so that's I feel like is the main knock that people have on him that I've seen on Twitter. And I'm gonna go out there and say unless there's some sort of other lower leg injury that's caused to it, like an ankle sprain where he lands on someone or a hamstring strain, I don't really have a ton of hesitation in him because of his injury risk. You look at a lot of the knee valgus, that means the knee's caving in as he cuts, and that just doesn't bother me. It's just a unique way he plays. It's not like he's running like that. It's not like he's jumping like that. He's just able to produce force in that way. So Jerry Jeudy's another just smash. Yes, I want him on all of the dynasty rosters I have. But yeah, Rich, just like what you were saying, if he's going in the middle of the first round, that's an awesome spot. I know there's going to be some running backs that get up there, and if you're in super flex leagues and you get two or three quarterbacks taken in the top five, all of a sudden you have a shot to get Jerry Jeudy at the 106 to 108 range. Oh my gosh. Like that's totally possible, which blows my mind that you could get such talent. So first round picks in this draft are just going to be nuts. Like people have been stocking up on them. It doesn't really matter if you're in super, especially if you're in super flex leagues, it doesn't really matter if you have a mid to late round first, you have a shot to get one of these. You have the shot to get the number two wide receiver.
Yeah.
And that's nuts.
Even it going into round two, looking at players like Justin Jefferson possibly dropping into round two, I know we'll probably cover him later. It's just such a deep class that, and that's why, you know, there was a lot of advice to keep hold of or trade for the 2020 first round picks. And you sort of hear that every single year. But this year, it's absolutely accurate that just hold on to those picks. And if you are going to trade them away, I would wait until right before the rookie draft to do so, because I think the value of them will just keep rising throughout this process.
I mean, let's go ahead and talk about Justin Jefferson. Oh, actually, real quick.
Landing spot.
Yeah. With Jeudy, he does have a meniscus surgery. He had one right before this season. So that is worth noting. It's a yellow flag for me. It's not a red flag or anything like that, but it is worth noting. So the whole knee thing is at least fun to talk about for us docs. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Jerry Jeudy's comps in the model: Stephon Diggs, Devontae Parker, Brandon Cooks. So
awesome.
Yeah. Who would you rather have, Stephon Diggs or Jerry Jeudy?
I mean, that's I'm a big Stephon Diggs truther, but I would still take Jeudy. I
don't love his. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say I do think there's an uptick in Diggs' value going to Buffalo, but not. As a Diggs owner in a few leagues, I'd say it wasn't the ideal landing spot that Diggs owners wanted. I do think it's a better fit for him than Minnesota was, but for Diggs to really see his value, Josh Allen has to take a step as well next year. So at this point, knowing where Diggs has gone, I would take Jeudy over Stephon Diggs.
Wow.
I didn't like the landing spot for Stephon Diggs. I think it's at best lateral for him. I'll probably go with Stephon Diggs just because I think his value is higher right now, but and he'll probably have a better 2020, but I think Jerry Jeudy, I think it's very close, and if Jerry Jeudy lands on the right team, you could easily see that flipped looking like, again, the Raiders, Niners, Jets, Broncos are all teams that could be looking to draft Jerry Jeudy. And I think again, it's a similar order. I think Jerry Jeudy on the Niners would be awesome. That's an offense built around yards after the catch and route running ability. And so I think it's a really natural fit for Jerry Jeudy to land on the Niners. And so if you get him on the Niners with Jimmy G, that's super easy for me to see Stephon Diggs and Jerry Jeudy flipped, you know, like that landing spot's something where I'm I'm thinking, all right, that could definitely flip them for me. What about you, Jetpack?
I think I'll take Judy. the deal is Stephon Diggs has only ever been a wide receiver too. I actually like the landing spot. I think Josh Allen is going to take him to the next level and boost his stats and all this kind of stuff. I think it would be good for Josh Allen to have Diggs too. But
oh yeah,
it's like Jameis Winston, right? Like he doesn't have to be a good quarterback for Diggs to have an increase in value. But I'll end up taking Judy because of age, I guess. But I think comparable sure. prospects, Judy for me, I like him better as a prospect too.
And I was just going to say, in terms of landing spot, I forgot to about potentially landing in San Francisco. And a lot of people saying that, well, we don't think they'll take a wide receiver because of Deebo. Now, I absolutely love Deebo Samuel, but I agree with what was alluded to earlier that I don't think he's an outside receiver. So I really do think the 49ers could take an alpha receiver in this class. And I think it was Urish that said, I don't think that affects Debo's value at all. I think he'll be used in the same way. And Shanahan has great ways of getting Deebo involved, whether it's in the run game or through trick plays. But I would love to see. I don't think he's an alpha receiver. So seeing Judy or Lamb would be fantastic, even for fantasy purposes and in football itself. I just think seeing Deebo with Judy or Lamb would be fantastic.
Right on.
I would love that.
Let's go Justin Jefferson. So for me, Justin Jefferson is the discount Jerry Judy, right? Maybe you'll get him a couple picks later, but stud SEC receiver that played a lot in the slot, who can do a lot of what you ask in terms of running routes. I don't have questions on Justin Jefferson's ability to go up and get the ball that I do with Jerry Jeudy, and so I really like him. He scores out like just a tick underneath what Jeudy does in my film model. So I'm digging him big time. Where do you guys have him?
I have him at wide receiver 4. So I'm big on Justin Jefferson as well. My only reservation with him is we've seen him mostly in the slot. As I was watching film, you never really saw him outside against that number one corner. You never saw him against press coverage. And so there's a decent element of his game that we aren't sure what it's going to look like. So will he be an outside wide receiver for teams? I'm not sure. I think he could develop into that because I think he's a good wide receiver. But who knows if the teams are going to use him like that. He's definitely in my second tier of guys. And I would love to see him on the Broncos. I think the Broncos would be great. They have Cortland Sutton on the outside, and I think they could really use that elite guy. Not that I don't like Deshaun Hamilton, but I think that Justin Jefferson is just, it's just a different tier of player, you know? And so I think the Broncos, if he lands on the Broncos, like that's an incredible fit, because Drew Lock, an ascending talent, I think he's a pretty good quarterback. And that would just pair really well with Cortland Sutton there. So if he lands on the Broncos, that's like ideal landing spot for me. Don't have a ton of questions about his game other than his ability to play as a true outside wide receiver rather than just a slot.
Right on.
Matt with him. I love Justin Jefferson. Discount Jerry Jeudy is a great spot to put him. I like that comp a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's the quarterback's best friend as well. I think, not to name any names, I think he elevated the play of his quarterback last year. In there. his 45-year-old fifth-year senior quarterback last year.
Oh, okay.
I'm asking for it now. Stop it.
Yeah, you are, aren't you?
On a serious note, I do have Justin Jefferson 5. I think calling him the discount Jerry Jeudy is a much better way of describing than I could have done. I probably have the same concerns as you, Rish, about him playing on the outside, but he was an absolute monster out of the slot last season. I think he's got decent speed and separation talent as well. But the only thing for me is you look at that LSU offense, joking aside about Joe Burrow, it's possibly one of the greatest college offenses we've ever seen, and that allowed him a lot of space. Obviously, he's not going to get that in the NFL. So I'll be interested to see how he takes that to the next level. But at this point, prior to the draft, I'm really excited about.
All right, so the guys around Justin Jefferson, Tyler Boyd, Michael Clayton, I don't know if you remember him, Dwayne Bowe, Jordan Matthews, Jarvis Landry. So,
all right.
Tyler Boyd or Justin Jefferson?
Oh, that's...
we'll take, assuming my man Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, yeah. I'll take
this should
I'll
be easy
Tyler
for Rich. Okay, all right.
Assuming the Bengals see sense and draft someone else. I'm just kidding. Take, despite my reservations on Burrow, I'm taking Tyler Boyd there.
Wow.
I think, as I said, I really like Justin Jefferson, but we've already seen what Tyler Boyd can do, and I think he seems to be quite severely underrated in a yes. lot of circles. I'm taking Tyler Boyd there.
Yeah, Tyler Boyd was such a good college prospect. And
yeah, he was awesome.
He wasn't on a great team, and so he kind of flew under the radar, ended up being a second rounder. But I think Justin Jefferson has a chance to be a first rounder, and I think that will, when we're doing analytical comps in the future, that's going to be a big game changer for his value too. But I'll probably take Justin Jefferson. I think he's a better athlete and can do more as far as like after the catch work than Tyler Boyd will. But yeah. Who's our next guy?
That's true. Next guy is Henry Ruggs.
Oh, yeah. Very polarizing prospect.
He is. And he's someone that I think when we talk about Henry Ruggs, we also have to talk about Jalen Reagor, because it was kind of like, which one do you like more? Both kind of seen as the speed guy. And so, and a lot of people will have him right next to each other. But Henry Ruggs, fastest guy at the combine, just absolutely blazing speed. Never had the overall production, but I mean, a ridiculous percentage of his plays went for touchdowns. And that was large in part due to his speed. So he's a great prospect. Don't get me wrong. He does have a lot of question marks. So Rich, what are your thoughts on Henry Ruggs as a prospect? Where do you have him ranked overall?
I actually have him a little bit lower. I've got Henry Ruggs at number 8 in my wide receiver rankings, but that doesn't necessarily mean I don't like him. I think it comes back to what we're saying, that this is such a deep class. I like how Ruggs, he can work all three levels. Because of his speed, you can just take a slant or a crossing route and he can just explode from there. It can turn it into big gains or go into the end zone. I think he's a fantastic weapon for quarterback. I'm just not sure how well that correlates with a move to the NFL. I think there are a few quarterbacks around him, but he is an exciting prospect. I don't like his press release too much. And I don't like from the little bit of film that I have seen on him, I don't like the stutter steps, and also I think he seemed to have a few issues dealing with physical cover corners as well, and that's obviously going to be much tougher at the NFL level as well. So I think you're right, question marks about him. I have ranked him a little lower. He's certainly an exciting prospect, but I think those question marks, the reason why he's ranked a little bit lower and probably in tier 2 in this wide receiver class.
Jeff, yes, what are your thoughts on Ruggs? I think you're a little higher on him than I am.
I am. It's all about potential, right? And what you can do if you're 4.27 and you can catch is limitless. He has a background working with the Bama coaches, and so he's going to understand and pick up NFL concepts really quickly. And so I just think it's about utility and a little bit of coaching, and then he's going to be right there in terms of his upside. So because it's all about, with any prospect, it's about, okay, how does this guy fit into my system? What are the traits that he carries with him? I think his traits are so rare and so special that for me, he's a little bit up there or a little bit higher in terms of the way that I'm evaluating him. I think a lot of the concerns as far as, oh, the dominator rating, and he wasn't, you know, hardly any players who don't break out do well in the NFL. It's like, we just saw it last year with Terry McLaurin. Guy runs 4.35. Guy can run routes. Guy can catch. Ruggs can do all of those things, and he's faster, and he's probably better, you know, ball skills when the ball's in the air. So he really impressed me with just his ability to go up and get it. And you've seen some of that when he in the dunking highlight videos too. It's just like he's got a unique body control up at the top, above the rim kind of work. And so the upside there, I really enjoy. I don't have the concerns of we hear all the time now. Ruggs is going to be a better football player than a fantasy player. I don't think that that's necessarily true. I don't think you have to go that way or feel that way about him. Angelo compared him to T.Y. Hilton, and I really like that. I think that that's the kind of asset you're looking for when you're talking about Ruggs and you're thinking about Ruggs. Comparison wise, in my model, I got Tyler Lockett, Emmanuel Sanders, Robert Woods, and DJ Moore, and wow, actually N'Keal Harry. So there's some interesting names there of guys whose, like, his athleticism bumps him up into like the same tier as N'Keal Harry, who's not as athletic, but a production standout. And by combining the athleticism scores with the college production scores, you can get names like this where, you know, I'm pretty excited about. So I'll go Ruggs or N'Keal Harry. Who would you rather have?
Ruggs. Instantly.
It's good that Ruggs. I can feel the steam from Rich. because if you're a stats guy, this should hurt really, really bad. It should hurt.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be fair, I was just slightly distracted. I was looking. Ruggs will be a better real life player than fantasy player. And trying to delete that quickly. I'm going to stick by my guns on this. I recommended Harry as a buy in Dynasty. I am going to say N'Keal Harry and try and save face.
Yeah. Ooh. That's okay.
I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but it's wrong. I think I would definitely rather have Ruggs here. Just like you said, though, Rich, his getting off of press coverage is abysmal. You saw LSU just dominate him, and he wasn't able to get anything going because he couldn't get off the line. And it's just because his press release is the exact same.
Did you watch 2018 LSU?
No, I did not watch 2018 LSU.
He destroyed him.
But were they playing press man against him the entire game?
Yeah, it was Greedy. He killed Greedy. Yeah. Interesting. I agree with you. I think the press man questions, I would totally agree with. Like, that's a challenge for him. And with his size too, that's something that he'll have to work on.
It doesn't mean he can't succeed and have awesome success. I think when I look at these guys, I'm looking at guys that can have more immediate impact, because I think a lot of their upside is very similar. And so if I'm looking at Jalen Reagor versus Henry Ruggs, I will take a Jalen Reagor, because I think his skill set's going to translate to the NFL much faster, and he's going to find success much faster than Henry Ruggs, who might have a little bit more refining to do. I also like, I'm not that I'm concerned about Henry Ruggs with the ball in his hand, but he's fast, but he's robotic. It's not like he's some guy who's going to juke you out of your shoes like a Jerry Jeudy. He's the speed guy, and he's the true speed guy. So his MO is just to outrun you. And so that'll work. But I think moving into a guy like Jalen Reagor, let's talk about him a little bit. I have him ranked as my number three wide receiver. And I think he's a guy that you look at him with the ball in his hands, and he's much more, I don't want to say dynamic, because it's not that Henry Ruggs isn't dynamic, but he's much more elusive, and just seems like a better, like, more natural athlete rather than a straight line kind of guy. So I really like Jalen Reagor. I think he's suffers from the concentration drops a little bit more than most, but I think he's a guy that you can fit in and have him really operate anywhere. I would liken him maybe to a Stephon Diggs type player. If he ended up in Minnesota to replace Stephon Diggs, I would be ecstatic with that. But I'm very high on Jalen Reagor. I got to talk to some guys that played against him and said that he was just every time he stepped on the field, he was the best player on the field. So cool. Cool to talk to guys that played against him. But you watch him on film and he's just dominant and quarterbacks looking for him every single play. Because you know that he's going to be the one that's open and you know that he gives you the best shot to win the game when the ball's in his hand. Where do you have him ranked, Rich?
So this is the one I really want to talk about. Top tier, I've got CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, and then I have got Jalen Reagor at the top of the second tier. So I've got him at number three. I think people sort of hold the drop in production against him. I think you mentioned the concentration issues, but I think there was also issues around poor quarterback play as well. But his speed is just unbelievable. He's just a playmaker. And I think the thing that really stands out for him, he moves up to the NFL level, is I think defenses will always have to account for him on the field. I love watching him with the ball in his hands. And as well, I think the way he wins the ball as well, I really like. And I think that's a trait that you need at the NFL level. I just can't wait to see where he goes and what he can do. I don't have him too far behind Jerry Jeudy.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't mind it. For me, I give grades for speed. And I gave Ruggs and Reagor the same 5.0 grade. So we know the 40 time, and so that's going to affect my overall model. But on film, Reagor just as fast, right? And we all thought that before the combine too. And so I love Reagor a lot as a prospect. I'm afraid that we will love him more than the NFL does, and that they know things about the TCU players and TCU players that have 700 yards receiving are not as valuable as Alabama players that have 700 yards receiving. And so the way that the language will translate for him, the way that the NFL pro concepts will translate, I think that'll be a little bit different. And so the projection is about what you like in his athleticism. Is that enough to boost up what you're guessing on the mental standpoint? And so earlier we were talking about comparing him against really good competition. In 2018, they played Ohio State and he faced up against Okuda, and I thought he handled himself well. He didn't win every play or anything like that, but there are a couple reps where he won, and then he beat Arnett for a one-hand catch and just ran right by him. So I think the talent level is there. We just would need to see a little bit more consistency before I had more confidence. But I love everything about him. Again, he's in the top of my tier two as well.
Where do you guys think that it could be? Do you think you'd see him drafted? Or, because as you said, it might be that our perspective that we like him more than the NFL.
Yeah, I think the Eagles are really interesting way back there.
Yes.
That would be the ideal landing spot for a lot of these guys. Reagor would probably be my favorite landing spot, or my favorite guy to end up there. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he fell into the second round. So that's a little bit of a challenge for me. But let's say Jalen Reagor ends up on the Eagles. Here's the comps. Okay. We got Sterling Shepard, Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins, and Odell Beckham.
Wow.
So I don't necessarily want to put him in that group of guys, right? And Mims is actually in that same cohort. But are there comparable ways of thinking about Christian Kirk and DeAndre Hopkins that could put some sort of frame of reference for you with Jalen Reagor? Let's say he ends up on the Eagles or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, it's difficult because those are such different players skill set wise.
Right.
Honestly, he is a good cross between the two because he's much twitchier and more of an outside guy than Christian Kirk, but he's definitely not DeAndre Hopkins. I think the Eagles. I was talking to a buddy who's an Eagles fan, and Alex Mendez actually edit that out. so I was talking to my buddy who's an Eagles fan, and we were talking about different guys that he would or what wide receivers he wants to land on the Eagles. And Jalen Reagor was top of the list there, just kind of a complete guy that can play inside and outside. So I think I don't know where I would rank them in dynasty compared to the two, but you have Alshon who's aging, DeSean Jackson who's aging. Like, that is a prime place for a 2021 breakout. Like, good, like solid 2020 season, and then 2021 just absolutely crush it because there's no competition there with Carson Wentz. So right. I mean, that's a landing spot that I would, that's a dream scenario. I don't know if they will take him there. There are a lot of options that they could definitely take in that spot. There's a lot of good wide receivers. And so while Jalen Reagor would be my personal favorite, I would not be surprised if he slipped into the second round. That's just me.
Yeah. I think a weird player comp for him that I actually have is Sammy Watkins. In terms of his like movability and where you could put him and play him anywhere. Sammy Watkins was like one of the best wide receiver prospects we've ever had. And that's kind of how I see him. If he's going to ascend to be a wide receiver one, I imagine it being the way that Sammy Watkins could have done it. So that's kind of where I'm at on him. I've heard him comp to Odell, and I think that's terrible. It's just a disgrace that Odell, just because he's had a couple bad years, has like fallen down that way. But I'm comfortable with like a Sammy Watkins kind of idea. Percy Harvin is another one that I really like, but that's where I'm at on Reagor.
Percy Harvin's a good comp. I like that. All right, let's move on to the next guy here. T. Higgins. I'm a little bit lower on T than you, definitely. But T. Higgins and Denzel Mims, just like you said in the model, are right next to each other. What makes you put one over the other? Like, what's the decider in either T. Higgins over Denzel Mims or Denzel Mims over T. Higgins for you, Jetpack?
Yeah, I'll stick with Higgins over Mims because of my confidence in Clemson receivers, and I think he's more impressive in the way that he runs his routes. I think he releases a little bit better. And his route tree is a little bit more advanced than what Mims is at this point. And Mims probably has a higher upside, and I know he runs the 4.38 and all that kind of stuff, but I'm more confident in Higgins, and I'll just kind of put it that way instead. So Higgins for me, he's like my wide receiver six, I think, and he's in that range just after Justin Jefferson. But yeah, I like him a lot. Model likes him a lot. And I think Kenny Britt is a really interesting comparison. In terms of having a long-limbed athlete that can jump and compete and do everything you want in that category, I'm okay with comping him to Kenny Britt.
Where's he at compared to like Mike Williams for you? Like as far as play style, and who did you prefer as a prospect between Mike Williams and T. Higgins? Because
That's what you got to do.
That class was obviously weaker than this class, where it was Corey Davis and Mike Williams. But Mike Williams was the number two wide receiver in that class, pretty consensus. And that's kind of what I see when I watch T. Higgins, which is what worries me, is that he's going to be a Mike Williams, and he's going to show flashes because he is great at the contested catch, but he's not going to be the guy.
Sure. I think that's a valid question. That's why he's a tier two guy for me. But I like T more than Mike Williams because I think he does more after the catch. And he's like sneaky good after the catch. Kind of like the way Denzel Mims is. And he's actually more impressive to me than Denzel Mims was after the catch. So once the ball's in his hands, he can do a little bit more. He's a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more physical, like surprisingly so. We remember in the national championship game, it was like an end round or a drag or something like that. And he had like a 50-yard score and he ran over Christian Fulton at the end, just totally blasted him. So I think he's a gamer. I know his dad's like some pro or something like that, or was a coach. And so there's all those like little elements that make me like T. Higgins probably more than what most people do.
Rich, where do you have T. Higgins ranked, and do you have him ahead or behind Denzel Mims?
I have him quite far behind, and I'm more leaning with your analysis risk than Jetback. I've got Higgins ranked at 9. I really like the Mike Williams comparison. I think he's going to be a dangerous playmaker down the field and in the red zone as well. What I do like about Higgins is how instinctive he is, and I think he's a ball winner, and I think that trait puts him ahead potentially of Mike Williams. But I do have quite a few concerns with him. I think he got beat up quite a lot by lesser cornerback competition. And I don't like his physicality at the top of the route either. But you look at him, and to be fair, can be improved. It's not that I'm totally out on T. Higgins. But the reason I have him a little bit further down is because I think there's a lot more work to do for him to become an established NFL starter.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I think you stole my rankings. No, we've agreed on every single guy so far. I have him at exactly that same spot right now at wide receiver 9. And it's not that I don't see the upside. I think Mike Williams' upside is excellent. But I saw Justin Ross come in and outproduce him when Justin Ross was a freshman. And not that I'm knocking him too much for that, but I see him getting outproduced by a true freshman. I'm like, well, if he was really this guy, does that mean that Justin Ross is that good, or does that mean that T. Higgins just didn't have the sauce to beat out a freshman? So that's one of my concerns. He obviously performed better this year than Ross did, but I'm a little bit concerned that he's going to end up like Mike Williams, and I'm a little bit concerned that he's not going to land in a good spot, and he'll be behind a guy like a Keenan Allen, and just won't get the targets that he needs to produce. I do like what you said though, Jetpack. He is sneaky good after the catch, and that is probably my favorite part about him, other than his contested catch, is that you can put the ball in his hand and he'll break tackles and he'll shake some guys. So I do like T. Higgins, but there are other guys that I prefer their game and their play style to the go up and win the jump ball type guys.
Yeah. In terms of fantasy value, I'm back on Tyler Boyd. In terms of fantasy value, I'm back on like a Tyler Boyd for him. Where I think he's like kind of like that borderline wide receiver 2, maybe the best receiver on his team, maybe not. Kind of guy. So
right.
Yeah. You want to go Mims, huh?
Yeah, let's go Mims. I have Mims ranked at 6 right now. So he's I kind of split up my tiers a little bit different. I tried to keep minimal guys in the tier. So I have him in my tier 3. But I have smaller tiers than I think most do. But I think I was lower on him at first, just at first glance. And then you watch him a little bit more in depth and you see the, just like you were saying, Jetpack, the body, you were telling me the other day, the body control he has sneaky speed. You don't see it on film necessarily, but it's not like guys hang with him, right? He on all his deep routes, he's solidly beat the corner. He's not blazed past them, but the corner is not step in step with him. And
right. 4.438 was a total shock, but he's fast.
Yep. And he's solid with the ball in his hands. He's a guy that his upside is so high because of his athleticism, but I don't think you've seen his full potential on film yet, right? He just looks like a solid wide receiver on film. He looks like a guy that you could slot in as a big slot or put him on the outside and pretty versatile there. But I think with his athleticism, there's still more in the tank. And that's what excites me is that you saw him with a terrible quarterback at Baylor. Just I did not like the way that quarterback played football. You saw him do well, and then you saw him dominate at the Senior Bowl. And just really excited about his upside. And it feels like he's starting to understand his upside, right? He's seeing himself against this top competition. He's like, I can hang with these guys. I can ball with these guys. And just like that, just like I was saying earlier, that confidence level is so important. And it feels like he's just starting to hit that confidence level. And now knowing him knowing his own time, I think it's going to be game over here after a little while. So I'm pretty high on Denzel Mims at this point. Yeah. Rich, where do you have him? Tell me you have him at six as well.
No, actually, we have got. I actually have him higher than six. I have him at four.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
he blew me away at the combine. I already was high on him. I think it's the height, weight, speed, his catch radius as well. I think he's a threat anytime he's near the red zone. I do agree. I think he's got a little bit to work on route running. So the reason I've got Mims so high is that he's looking at that upside. I don't necessarily think that he will be an instant impact player in the NFL. I think he does have a few things to work on. And I think, like you mentioned, Rish, it's about the confidence in his own ability and starting to believe in that. But if I was looking at Denzel Mims, I'd be looking at him as a little bit like, now you might laugh at this, I'm not comparing them as players, but just a little bit the same as my stance on N'Keal Harry, where I would probably wait until next year to try and acquire Denzel Mims in fantasy leagues. I don't think he'll have too much of an impact in his rookie year. And I think that may see his value drop going into his sophomore season. And that's where you could potentially acquire someone like Mims before the breakout.
He's definitely, I agree. I mean, it'll take the right landing spot for him to land to break out in year one. And I don't know that it will happen because it'd have to be the perfect storm. Maybe Philly would be a good place for him as well. Or Minnesota, where there's that Adam Thielen to take pressure off of him a little bit. But I'm with you on that. It might take him a year, but I'm pretty high on Denzel Mims. Where do you have him, Jetpack?
I think I got him at 5-6. So I'm with you.
All pretty consensus.
Yeah, I like him
on Mims there.
Yeah, 5-6-7.
Good player. Good player.
Let's go. Last guy, Bryan Edwards. He's the sneaky sleeper tier two guy. Where not being at the combine and also being a senior weighed out kind of guy. A lot of analytics guys will love him because he had the early breakout his freshman year when Debo was hurt, and so he got a lot of the volume there. So I like Bryan Edwards a lot. Film grade on him right now is 81, so that puts him right in the like wide receiver two kind of expectation early in the career. Where do you guys have him in terms of what you like about him as a prospect and where you think he struggles?
Go ahead, Rich. I want you to start us off on this one.
Yeah, so I've got Bryan Edwards at number six. It's interesting you talk about from an analytics perspective, because from that perspective, I absolutely love him. What I would say about Edwards is a lot depends on his landing spot, which we've talked about a lot tonight. So his draft capital and things like that could alter that. I'm not that confident in terms of where he'll go in the NFL draft. That may knock my valuation down of him a little bit, but in terms of what I like about Bryan Edwards, his good size. I think he's strong. He's a consistent producer against quality competition. I like how shifty he is in space. And I like his ball tracking downfield as well. I think it could be a little bit better, but that's something you can potentially work on. I think he's good when trying to make catches in crowded areas. In terms of what I do have a few concerns about him. I don't think he uses his size enough on 50-50 throws. But again, he potentially needs to fine-tune his route running a little bit. But in the main, I really like him as a prospect. A lot just depends on where he goes.
Yeah, I agree. It keeps coming down to these same landing spots for me. But I like Bryan Edwards. I have him right in the T. Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones right in there. So I'm a little bit lower, but that's just because I have one or two guys that I'm a little bit higher on that I think we won't even get to talk about today. But I like Bryan Edwards. To me, he feels like what everyone wanted. He's what everyone wanted. Oh, why am I blanking on this name? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. He's what everyone wanted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to be, right? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was kind of this big physical guy that you thought you could just kind of throw in the red zone and he'd make plays. And I think Bryan Edwards is an upgraded version of that. I think he's good with the ball in his hands. I think he's just a solid overall player. There's nothing about him where you're like, wow, this guy's an elite prospect, but there's not a ton that you don't like about his game. He's pretty physical, got solid hands, and so I think he's right in that tier with T. Higgins for me. I don't really have a preference between the two when it comes down to it. So I really like Bryan Edwards a lot. I think if he were given an opportunity where he becomes that red zone threat for teams, I think he can do a good amount of damage there in the NFL. And I think that's probably or hopefully what teams are going to do with him is let him kind of body people up a little bit, but use his superior athleticism to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to actually make that a reality. So that was my initial thought, is he's an upgraded version of J.J. I don't know. Who is he near on the model? Jetpack, do we have that info on him?
No, he doesn't go in because he's got no combine stats.
I didn't know if he had a pro day from him at all.
No, nothing. So, he had the broken foot, and we all know the best receivers in the NFL break their foot. like literally every single one that you can think of has broken their foot. So, I think just by that, he'll be a good guy, definitely a good player. comparison wise, I think Juju Smith-Schuster is another good comp. In terms of what you would hope he would end up growing to become. But they're almost like the same age, so. Just a heads up there for all you guys that don't like Burrow. Bryan Edwards is also like comparably old.
I was going to say, actually, like I usually take a stance against senior players, but so I have contradicted myself a little bit.
Well, yeah, both he and Mims are interesting in that sense that analytically there's like, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to like seniors kind of deal. But
I don't think it's the podcast. And I'm sure there is a counter argument to it. My worry isn't that as a senior, it's that there was barely any production prior to his senior year. It's more that, not that I believe that Joe Burrow fell, it's more that I don't think he's necessarily a 100% smash that people seem to be expecting or the answer to all of the Bengals' problems. I still think it's a little as awesome as he was last year. And we joke around with Joe Burrow, he was outstanding last season. But I just worry about the risk of basing judgment on him as the number one overall pick and as a franchise quarterback on one fantastic season. That's what I'm putting out there. So just prevent the ambush.
That's a fair analysis.
I like that. All right, we got to get to it.
Let's talk about that tier three real quick. Just go through your guys both of you. Give me your favorite of these guys from tier three or rank them, or just like one quick thought as we go through this tier three. You have Donovan Peoples-Jones, Devin Duvernay, LaVisca Chenault, Antonio Gandy-Golden. Which one of those guys sticks out for you?
I just did a juicy thread on Devin Duvernay, so check that out. And then I've done a GameScope DPJ as well. I like both those guys. Devin Duvernay really jumps out to me as far as like his skill set is weird because he's not a loose hipped guy. And so playing in the slot will be really interesting. But he's a legit speed threat. He's got great hands and he's really tough. And so I really like watching Devin Duvernay. I think he can definitely be an asset for a team.
Rich, which of those guys do you like best?
I think for me, I'm going to go with the one that I think it was a mistake for him to run at the combine. I think he was either injured or he's either injured prior to it or he got injured or he further injured himself during the combine. I am concerned that potentially may affect where he's taken in the draft, but taking all that out of it, I just really like his physical traits and ball skills. I think he's a three-level threat. And I've got him ranked at 7, so I've got Bryan Edwards at 6, LaVisca Chenault at 7. And I've actually got them, so I've got them both ranked above Henry Ruggs and T. Higgins.
All right, so that's a tier two guy for you, LaVisca Chenault. He's a guy that I heard after last year. So beginning of the 2019 season, I had several people that I interacted with on Twitter had him as their number one wide receiver for this class. So he had an interesting year, tough year with injury and all that. My guy out of this group that I really like is Donovan Peoples-Jones. He's a freak athlete, and he played on a terrible offense for passing the ball. We literally have no clue what he is and what he could be. All I know is his outbreaking cuts are unguardable. He's so long that if you can put the ball out there, he's got enough separation because of his explosiveness, and he can lay out for the ball. So anything outbreaking is pretty much his, which I love. He just owns it, and nobody's going to be able to stop that unless they know the route's coming. So like Donovan Peoples-Jones, I like the completely untapped upside there. So that's my favorite of that group. I think that's good. Good group there. The one guy that I want to mention that I watched today that I was pleasantly surprised with was Benjamin Victor, and he's an excellent blocker. And I think while he's not this elite guy, I think he has a lot of good tools. So he's a guy that I think in last year's class or 2 years ago, he would have been a guy that that people were a little bit higher on, but because this class is so star-studded, he's not getting pretty much any hype or any traction. But he's a guy that I would definitely look to target in later rounds of rookie drafts. Just was pleasantly surprised by him today.
All right, back. Are you ready for this game?
Oh, I'm so ready for this trivia game.
We have 8 minutes, so right. It's you versus the clock.
Okay.
You guys are going head to head in a spelling bee.
Let's do it. Oh, wow.
You get one shot, no mistakes. Are you feeling good about yourself, Rich?
After the last performance, I know.
I'm interested to see if the British English versus the American English is impacts this at all.
Yeah, well, let's find out. All right, so here's how it's going to work. We're going to be starting with Rish with an SH because the name is, we're playing the spelling bee game because you guys are so close in name. But we're going to start with Rish. And you're just going to spell it out. You got one shot. I would like the word, then the spelling, then the word again to finalize.
Okay. All right.
Ready to go?
Sir.
I got you on a timer, and we are going to begin. Your first word is eclipse.
Eclipse. E-C-L-I-P-S-E. Eclipse.
Very good. Rich, are you ready for your word?
I am.
Your word is Uranus.
Uranus. Uranus.
Very good. Rish, your word is quasar.
Quasar. Q-U-A-Z-A-R. Quasar.
No, that is incorrect.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
I have no clue.
That's minus 1 point. Rich, your word is constellation.
Constellation. C-O-N-S-T-E-L-L-A-T-I-O-N-S. Constellation. I said constellations then, actually.
You did. Minus a point.
Ooh, I looked up quasar.
I don't even know what quasar. What is a quasar?
Rish, why don't you tell us?
If you're talking about the band, then
we're not.
I spelled it right. it's a massive and extremely remote celestial object emitting exceptionally large amounts of energy and typically having a star-like image in a telescope.
That's right. All right, Rish, you ready for your next word?
Sir.
Your word is zenith.
Zenith. X-E-N-I-T-I-H, zenith.
No. That is incorrect. It's zenith.
Oh, crap.
Z-E-N-I-T-H.
I had
minus
way
two.
Wrong.
Minus two. Three strikes and you're out of here. All right, Rich, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Your word is rendezvous.
Oh, God. Rendezvous. R-E-N-D-E-Z-V-O-U-S. Rendezvous.
Oh, that's so close, but incorrect. You forgot the last Z.
Well, there's two.
Instead of an S, it's a Z.
I would like to challenge the English-American spelling of that. I've thrown the red flag. I don't think we have time.
You did say Z, and it's actually a Z, so you're double wrong.
That's all those 2 points.
2 minus 2. All right. So it's sudden death now.
Oh, God.
All right. First one to lose, but you each get to go. Okay. You ready, Rish?
Yes, sir.
Your word is propulsion.
Propulsion. P-R-O-P-U-L-S-I-O-N. Propulsion.
That is correct.
Yes, yes.
That was hard. Rich, if you don't get this word, you lose. You're out.
No pressure at all.
Your word is pressurized.
Is this the American or English spelling?
Oh, bad. Let me change words. Don't want to confuse you.
No, it's okay. We'll go with the what I think is pressurized.
I'll accept both.
Okay. P-R-E-S-S-U-R-I-Z-E, pressurize.
There you go. Correct. All right. Here we go. Rish, your word is Namdi Asamoah.
Oh, man. All right. Namdi Asamoah. N-A-M-D-I-A-S-U-M-W-A-H. Namdi Asamoah.
No, that is far off. Two N's at the beginning. N-N-A-M-D-I.
I. Oh, it was two
N's. Two N's.
I thought it was just the last. And there was a space in there.
Yeah. Asamoah. A-S-O-M-U-G-H-A. Namdi Asamoah.
Not even close.
So officially, Rish loses the game. But Rich
still has to get one correct.
In order to get this in order to truly win, you have to get this correct. Your word is Indomicon Sue.
Oh my God. Indomicon Sue. N D A M K O N G H space S U H. Indomicon Sue.
No, that's incorrect.
Well, I'm shocked.
Very close, though. It's N-D-A-M-U-K-O-N-G-S-U-H. Ndamukong Su.
It was way better than I would have gotten.
All right, Rish. You've already said his name once today. Maybe not on the pod, but you have mentioned him. In order to win it all, this is going to be open to both of you, whoever wants to spell it correct.
Okay.
The word is Albert Akwegubonam.
Oh, yeah, I tweeted this out. A-L-B-E-R-T. O-W. A-E-G. E-U-N-A-M.
No, that's incorrect.
Close.
Rich, would you like to try?
I'm not even going to try. I pass.
Okay. We need some sort of tiebreaker here. So we'll give it to Rich. If he gets the word correct, then he wins. If not, then it goes to Rish, and he has an opportunity to win. Are you ready?
Yes, sir. Yes.
The word is perihelion.
I got this one. I'm ready for you, Rich.
Oh, God. I don't even... Perihelion.
Perihelion.
Okay. P-E-R-I-H-E-L-E-O-N. Perry Elion.
Oh, incorrect, but very close.
Oh, Perry Elion.
It is that point in a solar orbit which is nearest to the sun. Rish, are you ready to take your claim as the Spelling Bee champion?
Yes. Perihelion, P-E-R-I-H-E-L-I-O-N, Perihelion.
That is correct. Helion like a lion. Very good.
I'm now 0-2. Good I've lost work. To myself. I've lost to myself, and now I've lost to Rich.
Excellent work, gentlemen. Rich, is awesome to have you on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Next time, the next game will be even better.
Will be even better.
So.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening in. We appreciate you. Don't forget to listen to the British Ballers podcast, and don't forget to follow Rich on Twitter at FFMiz1. We are the Fantasy Football Astronauts, and we are blasting off again.